On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
The National Gallery of Ireland may be temporarily closed, as indeed are all cultural institutions in the state, but they've still been busy away behind the scenes, and they've just undertaken something fairly remarkable. They've just made 1,000 high-resolution images of some of the artworks in their own archive available online for free under Creative Commons. And what all of that means is that work by some of Ireland's leading artists, which is now out of copyright, is now freely available to observe in digital form. But not only can it be observed, you can also transform and reimagine it if you're so inspired. So, well, what's up there and what could you do with these artworks? Well, Donal Fallon, a real culture vulture, has already been trying to turn it into some sort of non-fungible blockchain token, more of which I'm sure we'll talk about and on. Donal, just when we were running out of things to do, suddenly this comes along.
Yeah, in the boredom of quarter one, 2021, you know, many may have felt that they exhausted everything available to them and that, you know, the last Netflix series had been consumed. And I find myself watching a lower quality of American TV series week after week at the moment. But anyway,
do you want to name names?
Last week we talked about the airport, Dublin Airport. So we'll continue the broad theme of things we miss. And this week our focus turns to galleries. I think, the story of galleries and museums internationally during the pandemic has been a kind of strange one, because on one level, of course, museums and galleries, they've suffered greatly in the absence of visitors. Mm. Visitors are the lifeblood of any cultural institution. But then on another level, something strange has happened. There's been the kind of unique opportunity of a pandemic, which is something that museums and galleries have kind of seized upon. People are at home. They have very, very little to do. You know, they're sick of making banana bread, but they have endless access to social media and the internet. So we've kind of seen the emergence of really excellent kind of online exhibitions and virtual tours and that kind of thing across the world.
Yeah, I heard the curator of the Dublin International Film Festival, sponsored by Virgin Media, on the radio during the week about how ordinarily there's great competition among film festivals like that, but now they're very collaborative because they're learning from each other about how you just go about technologically trying to host a film festival online and how you go about acquiring the rights and streaming them and making sure that people can still, you know, enjoy a communal experience without actually being in the same place at the same time. This that we're talking about today, though, is very much different because it's not so much a curated exhibition as it is basically just a mix of anything and everything.
It's one of the most interesting initiatives I've seen anywhere from a museum or a gallery during this madness. Like the uploading of a 1,000 high resolution, like we're talking perfectly high resolution, good to print artworks to the general public and giving them under Creative Commons the freedom to do whatever they want with them. And, you know, that includes commercial kind of reimagining and republication. So, I mean, this, you hear something like this, you know, 1,000 artworks online that you're free to reinterpret, reprint, whatever. You might think about artists that are centuries dead, you know, like with the written word and copyright and all those cheap editions of Shakespeare that you see. But actually what the National Gallery of Ireland have brought forward includes people like John Butler Yeats, Harry Clarke, Sarah Purser. So we're talking, leading Irish artists
fairly
the 20th
contemporary
century,
yeah.
And their work has just been put there in the public domain.
The gallery, as a lot of galleries tended to, began life in a very different time, and people were much less egalitarian about who art was for and who should be able to go and experience it.
And that's what's quite funny about this, because this is so incredibly egalitarian, this idea of launching art into the world under Creative Commons. And it wasn't always that way. You know, when galleries like the National Gallery opened, it opened in 1864, and it began very humbly, 112 artworks, dozens of which were actually on loan from the National Gallery in London, amongst other sources. So it was a strange time in the world, you know, this a transformative time, I suppose, for cultural institutions, recreational institutions. And people finally had, you know, that hard-won victory, you know, things like the weekend, time off work. But the idea of a national museum and national gallery was kind of controversial among especially the upper echelons of society, who've been quite happy just hoarding this stuff in their houses. And one contemporary in Britain had a shocking line. She said that the loiterers and loungers and the vulgar starers were the kind of people who'd be going to national galleries and national museums. The vulgar starers, whatever a vulgar stare.
That's sort of how you feel when you go into a high-end part of a foreign city and you decide that you go and want to walk into like the Louis Vuitton store or the Dior store or something. You just feel like a vulgar starer. Like, I'm not going in there to buy any luggage. I'm just going in for a gawk, you know?
What's the cheapest thing in the Gucci shop? But thankfully in Dublin, like, the gallery really flourished for a kind of variety of reasons. And then in time, it was championed by the great George Bernard Shaw, who kind of insisted that his real education in Dublin came from the National Gallery. He would go in the Mitch from school, and he always referred to the gallery as the cherished asylum of my boyhood, which is a brilliant kind of Shaw way with words.
And indeed, on that note, Shaw, isn't he? He's today honoured in the gallery with the fine statue that greets you when you go in, or the greeting.
It's rather. It's a fantastic statue when you come in the Clare Street side of the gallery. And you know, not only was Shaw generous in his lifetime, he was especially generous in death, because a very significant percentage of his kind of posthumous royalties flowed into the Dublin Gallery. So, you know, if you're ever in there appreciating artworks, there's a very good chance that the pockets of a dead George Bernard Shaw paid for what you're looking at. And to be honest, it was probably the only real connection that Shaw maintained with the city of his birth, because he spent a lot longer living outside Dublin than in it. But he had a great line. He said, "You use a glass mirror to see your face, you use works of art to see your soul." And everyone, Shaw believed, rightly, should be allowed in to see them. There shouldn't be a barrier, you know, to getting into a gallery or a museum.
Yeah, and although the idea of galleries being free entry, it's pretty universal in Ireland now, and it's fairly common around the world, but a gallery that's free to visit on the scale of the National Gallery in Ireland is fairly unique internationally.
Yeah, and anyone who's travelled like across the world, I mean, one of my abiding memories of New York City is the feeling that you would go broke here very quickly, you know, if you liked culture too much, because you pay every time you enter a gallery or a museum. And the fact that, you know, our museums and galleries that are under state control, National Museum, National Gallery, they're generally free to enter and visit the main collections. I think that is kind of, on one level, uniquely Irish. Mm. And one effect of that people never really talk about, I think, is that people become more familiar with art, because you might pop into the National Gallery on your lunch hour if you work just around the corner.
Mm. And indeed, I have done, actually. Hands up,
exactly,
I've done that, because
exactly.
I live next door.
Yeah, and like all of the politicians who work around the Dáil, Leinster House, would probably have the same experience. But you might not do that if you had to pay to go in every time. But this new initiative of kind of putting a 1,000 images online under Creative Commons, that goes one step further than just saying it's free to come in and have a look. That kind of takes the art and it brings it into people's homes, which is extraordinary. Mm. So if people want to see them, it's a very simple process. NationalGalleryImages.ie, click Creative Commons module, and what really hits you when you look at these images is that they come from right across the collections. There's Irish stuff, there's international stuff, there's painted portraits, there's, you know, bronze reliefs, everything you can think of.
Okay, it's not just imagery, that there's other sort of three-dimensional stuff that's there captured as well.
Incredible stuff, and given what we talked about last week, actually one of the items is an image of a great bronze relief of Desmond Fitzgerald TD by Jerome Connor, the artist. So it's just endless stuff on there from, you know, from Dublin to Rome and everywhere in between. Actually, 1,000 images is quite a lot. You can kind of get lost in it when you first look.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the idea that it's not just the two-dimensional stuff, that it's not just photography or portraits, that there's other, you know, the busts and the likes as well. That kind of makes it all the more intriguing as well. You've singled out one amazing, very early photograph, which I think is probably unlike anything else that exists digitally or otherwise in Ireland today.
I was not aware that this even existed, but there's a series of photographs, and they're kind of the earliest kind of photographs, dating from kind of 5 years after the arrival of the very earliest photographic technology. So, you know, the kind of pictures we all would have taken on mobile phones around like 2001, they look worse than that. You know, this is the very beginning of photo technology. But they're prisoners in the Richmond Bridewell, which is now the site of Griffith College, in 1844.
Wow.
So imagine a photograph from 1844, pre-famine. And one of those was actually in jail at the time. He remembered an artist's studio and a camera were set up to multiply likenesses of the prisoners. But one of the prisoners photographed is Daniel O'Connell, because the lads are all from the Repeal Association campaigning for the repeal of the Act of Union.
Yeah.
They end up in prison. So here we have, you know, the earliest, albeit like very, very early and somewhat unclear, photograph of a major Irish political leader. And Daniel O'Connell is someone that we're only really familiar with from, you know, the illustrations.
Yeah, but it was the old 20 quid banknote, was it?
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, they're primarily propaganda, you know, when they're drawn in the 19th century. They present O'Connell in a certain way. But here we have the actual face of O'Connell. It's just an incredible thing to see.
I want
to
have a look at that and then compare him to the statue at the top of the street and see whether the likeness of him that the pigeons all like to rest on.
The sculptor was very kind. That was my review when I saw
it. Fair enough. What sort of other gems are there? Have you picked out a personal favourite of what's there?
Sarah Purser, brilliant painter, her portrait of Sir Roger Casement, painted in 1914. Actually, I think I'll take advantage of this one being Creative Commons and stick it up somewhere. It's really striking, but it captures kind of Roger Casement at a transformative moment in his life. I remember Casement, former kind of darling of the British colonial service, who'd been knighted for his work in the Congo, and then throws himself into revolutionary nationalism. But you know, Sarah Purser is this great painter, painted a lot of people from high society. She's a great joke. She said, I went through the British aristocracy like the measles. But then Casement was this kind of renegade of that society, someone who'd been thrown out from that society and had gone down a very different road. So it's just incredible to see 1940 in Roger Casement, 2 years from his execution, not far removed from his life in the British colonial service. And then you also have sketches, drawings, kind of the development of artworks from famous names, which is quite cool to see too. Landscapes, familiar places, and then things that are just totally unusual to us from the foreign collections. But I mean, the question ultimately is what will become of these, or what could become of them.
We'll come to that in just a second, actually. But I'm glad that you pointed out that it's not just the two-dimensional stuff, because I have to admit, before you sent on the notes this morning about this slot, I didn't know that this existed at all. And I just presumed it would only be photography and portraits. But my favourite thing, not necessarily in the digital archive, but the thing that I always like, just the fact that it's very there, is the fact that Ireland's first medal as an independent country from the Olympic Games is there, because it's Jack Butler Yeats' silver medal that he won for portraiture at Paris in 1924, and that's in there. And I might actually go out and check out now if you can see this brilliant high-res reproduction of that medal, because I always just love that it's there on public view next door, and that so few people know that he even won the medal, let alone that it's on public view. To go back to the point that you just made, though, about what's going to become of these, ordinarily, if you have any major artwork that has any kind of significance at all, or whether it's even more broadly known in society, there's always going to be a temptation that people are just going to stick it on a postcard or a T-shirt and try and make money from it, isn't there?
Yeah, I think like cynics might think that people just run them off endlessly in kind of cheap editions and sell them. But I'm kind of hopeful that rather than just being reproduced, and that would be a reproduction, to just reprint something and sell it, that the works might be, maybe the word we should use is kind of remixed, and that's been a feature of modern art in sometimes surprising ways. Sean Hillen from Ulster comes to mind. He works a lot with collage and kind of creates kind of wild scenes by, putting layers of images on top of each other. So, I mean, that could be done with some of these works to make new, exciting things. And you see that same kind of spirit in street art. Banksy does that a lot too, where you take an old classical painting and you add something humorous or biting to it. So that's where I think the really exciting potential is, that people will add layers to these works, and try and reproduce something new, if you will, from the old.
Yeah, we'll see what sort of 21st century version of an Andy Warhol mass reproduction that there might be when people start to get their hands on this and we're able to apply their creative talents to it. And what's particularly remarkable at all of this as well, Donal, is that it comes at a time when the idea of art and digital no longer means free, because there's been some digital artworks that have been selling this week for incredible sums of money.
Yeah, fools and their money are easily parted, and this week we've seen the explosion of NFTs, basically digital artwork sold on the blockchain, basically akin to kind of cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Morons paying kind of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars for GIF files, basically, which is just insane to me. But anyway.
Listen, there are some GIFs that are worth an awful lot of money, in fairness. But it's a bizarre one, isn't it? Because then it means that instead of something being easily copied and pasted and pirated, that there's some sort of weird means through which you can establish the true owner of things, so that you can never really appropriately steal stuff that way.
Yeah, I see Elon Musk's partner made millions off them, which is funny. I mean, he's worth a fifth of $1 trillion. You'd think they'd be happy with that. But, people want to own these digital files of artwork. So, but, this is something else entirely from NFTs, because this is kind of using technology and its possibilities to give free access to art and to kind of encourage the public to be playful with it. And this is just the beginning in some ways, I would think, because like the gallery collection consists of about 14,000 artworks. Some of those things, good luck digitizing them. We're talking like sculpture, furniture. But when it comes to paintings, the possibilities are endless. And people go to the gallery, there's particular things that bring visitors to the National Gallery of Ireland. The meeting on the turret stairs, the taking of Christ, the Holy Family. But I kind of hope that this new digital offering shows people artists they might not be so familiar with. And I think, look, there's never been a better time. There's nothing else to do. There's never been a better time than to dive in and to expose yourself to art.
So there aren't any second-rate American TV series on Netflix that you'd like to recommend before you go then, no?
I'm done with Netflix. We're on a break.
You've completed it. You've finished Netflix. You've got to the end of putting your initials like a video game. If fools do want to be easily parted with the money, by the way, Jack Dorsey is trying to sell the first ever tweet posted to Twitter through one of these blockchain-style things as well. I don't know how you could possibly proclaim to own something which is pretty evidently Jack Dorsey's first tweet, but nonetheless, there you go. What was the website address again if people wanted to check out those images, Donal?
It's online at nationalgalleryimages.com.
Perfectly.
Sorry, nationalgalleryimages.ie.
Perfect. Right. We'll send listeners there then if they want to while away some of the hours that they're spending, at least until April the 5th, when they might get a better sense of what they're allowed to do. Nationalgalleryimages.ie. Donal Fallon, thank you very much as ever for that. Donal Fallon, historian, culture vulture, man who has completed now all of Netflix, can confirm. He is also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast about Dublin history, which you'll find online.
On the record, on News Talk.
With Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.